Dog bites, dog attacks have been in the news a lot lately. Statewide, the Arizona Department of Health Services says there is a 139% increase in the number of severe dog bite injuries from 2008 to 2012. Maricopa County's figures don't show such a precipitous climb, but whether it's a four-year-old boy attacked by the family pit bull or a couple being seriously injured trying to break up a fight between its dogs, how serious is the issue of dog bites? In a few minutes, I'll talk with an ASU professor who studies canine behavior, but first I'm joined by Melissa Gable, Public Information Officer for Maricopa County Animal Care and Control, and Samantha Spinelli, who is in charge of Animal Care and Control's Alternative Placement Department. Welcome to you both. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Melissa, let's start with the numbers. As I said, Maricopa County's numbers had not jumped like Arizona's numbers?
You know, not really. We average about 5,000 dog bite reports every year. And again, that's an average. Now, the Department of Health study went through 2012. And I will say that in fiscal year 2012, that was our highest number of dog bites reported. We have 5,090. But then in fiscal year 13, we dropped down to 4,878. And then our current numbers are actually showing we're about 150 fewer dog bites reported than the same period the previous year. So we are seeing a little bit of a decline.
Based on any trends we may look for, is there anything folks at Animal Care Control are thinking about, they're looking at a little bit more closely, maybe where bites are taking place or what time of year, that kind of thing?
Yeah, you know, we always check to see what areas where we have dogs running at large, where are our bites coming in? Is that an area where perhaps we need to send more animal control officers out to make sure that animals are kept indoors and, you know, out of the street, but also educating people about the importance of keeping your animals inside or in their yard, and also educating your family about how to interact with animals.
Samantha, I mentioned what your title was, but give us a better idea of what it is that you do with Animal Care and Control.
I send animals out to other rescue organizations and our foster homes, as well as our two adoption centers.
So what are you finding when, and I don't know if there probably isn't some sort of universal answer to this, but when we find that the dogs who have bitten someone, and there are different, obviously many different layers of that, it may just be a nip, I suppose, or maybe a dog is aggressive in certain situations. How do you work with that as far as getting dogs to a rescue organization or getting folks who want to get involved with that? Are there certain things you have to take into account, certain things you have to measure with what a dog has done and how a dog may behave in the future?
Absolutely. I mean, severity of bite is a factor. So there's some things that you just aren't safe to work with. But a lot of it is looking at circumstances. Does it seem to be a pattern of behavior, or was it a situational bite? You know, were we pulling the dog out of a canal and again it bit, or does he do this all the time?
Well, how often does that happen? Are there certain examples you can cite where one happens more frequently than others? Are you more likely to...
I can't cite numbers, but I can, just from experience and I guess just from my personal experience, situational is far more common.
Interesting. Okay. Any consistency we see with owners when it's not a case of a dog that's been deserted or a stray dog? Are people, again, is it different as well as far as how people behave and how people treat their animals?
I think so. I think there's a disconnect with expectations and what's appropriate to expect of the species, dogs. And looking from the animal's perspective, there's a lot of times we expect them to meet our needs and to meet our, you know, certain obligations to us, when really what we need to be doing is going, you know, this is an animal. He has the intellect of about a toddler, give or take. I need to look at the world from his perspective and see what's going on so I can meet his needs and accommodate him if possible.
And Melissa, what have you run into as far as that goes?
I mean, I definitely agree with Sam. And the one thing that I do want to point out, too, is I think a lot of people, with all the publicity that's been surrounding these dog bites, I think it's important to let the public know that just because a dog bites and it ends up at our shelter doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be euthanized. And again, it goes back to that case by case, take the situation, consider, you know, what happened, how did this happen? And again, as Sam said, is it a pattern of behavior? Was it a one-time thing? And so I think it's really important to let people know that just because he bites doesn't mean he's automatically euthanized. Now, we do, we're very transparent with potential adopters. We let them know up front this dog was involved in a bite. We have a waiver that they sign so that everyone is aware of what has happened. But, just because a dog has bitten, we're not going to hold that against the dog because, again, we don't know the circumstances surrounding that bite.
Well, and how long, Sam, when you're involved with these dogs, how long do you observe them to see whether it is a pattern of behavior and see whether it was just one particular bad situation? As you mentioned, the way dogs are, being the equivalent to a toddler, they're going to behave in a certain way that maybe is not how we always want, as those of us who own dogs know.
Yes. Well, it depends. It really is case by case. A lot of times it's taking information of what was a situation that occurred and then seeing what we see in the kennels, in our shelters, and of course in our foster homes. And that can be different too. So there's, it's not as simple as
Yeah, one of the things that comes up too, and I don't want to paint with a broad brush here, so I want to see if the two of you can enlighten us a little bit. Is there a certain breed? Are there certain breeds? I know that there are no breed is exclusive as far as biting, but should we be concerned about certain breeds that are a little bit more aggressive?
I guess yes. I mean, there are breeds that are more prone to working with using their mouths, like herding breeds. It's not unusual to hear of some nipping ankle or little kids, the rear ends, you know, and getting it because they're herding them down the hallway or something. They're doing what they were bred to do. You know, it's one of those things. I know pit bulls get in the limelight a lot, but actually pit bulls were bred for, yes, I mean, it's not unusual for there to be animal and aggression with pit bulls, but people aggression shouldn't be there. That's not appropriate to the breed.
Yeah. I think it's also important to note that Chihuahuas, Dachshunds, Terriers, those little dogs bite too. You don't hear about it as much in the news because when they do bite, they don't do the damage that a pit bull or an Akita or a larger dog could do. And so that tends to bring the attention to them because the damage is much more severe than if my Chihuahua were to bite me.
Melissa Gable and Samantha Spinelli will stick with us through this break. And we'll be joined by an ASU professor who has an expertise in canine behavior. Stay tuned. It's KJZZ's Here and Now. Good morning. I'm Steve Goldstein. For more about dog behavior and how human behavior can play a role, I'm joined by Clive Wynn, professor in ASU's psychology department. He's also in charge of the Canine Science Collaboratory. Dr. Wynn, good morning.
Hi, Steve. Good to be with you.
This is a tough question, I suppose, but what should our expectations be as far as our relationships with our dogs, with our pets?
Well, I mean, clearly people can have, many people do have an absolutely wonderful relationship with their dogs. Dogs have been with humans for probably 15,000 years now, and they've got pretty good at figuring out what we want from them and providing us with a happy, peaceful life alongside them. There are supposed to be over 80 million dogs in the United States today living as pets, so it's a quite amazingly successful relationship. And although, you know, I know your program today was prompted by some very unpleasant incidents here in the Phoenix area, the remarkable thing is that, you know, these millions of dogs living alongside us, and actually, generally speaking, they cause very little harm, very little bother. They're really happy to live with us. But I don't think we should lose sight of the fact that each individual dog pup has to learn how to do that. And if we don't give dogs opportunities to learn what it is we expect from them, then things can go awry, as we've seen recently.
So how important is training, what we label as training, and to what extent does that training need to be consistent? I don't mean consistent among one owner and one dog, but across the spectrum of even different dogs, because dogs, much like humans, have, yeah, they behave a little bit differently. Of course, they have different personalities.
Yeah. Well, when I say that dogs need to learn how to live with us, I mean, sure, training, taking your dog to classes is a good idea, but it's not essential to teach your dog a whole load of clever things. Your dog just needs to understand that you're in charge and that you're not going to harm him or her, that you're going to provide safety and security, and that the dog can be relaxed and happy around the people in the home. The problems arise with dogs that don't spend enough time with people, the dogs that are tied up outdoors all day, that literally get to the end of their tether, you know, if they're tied up, and they're very stressed by having other individuals, dogs and people go past all the time, and they don't feel like they control the situation that they're in. Dogs are social beings, you know. Dogs need to be with people, and it's tough on them to be tied up or locked up for long periods of time on their own.
Right. Some of us would wonder why people would do that in the first place.
Well, the thing is that
to be judgmental for a second, sure.
Sorry?
To be judgmental for a second, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is, we all want the pleasures of dog companionship. I say we all. I mean, many people want the pleasures of dog companionship, and it's a wonderful thing. But one needs to think seriously about what kind of life one needs. And I'm very fortunate. You know, I am able to work at home quite a lot, and so I can provide my dog with company through large chunks of many days. But we all of us get into situations where we just can't be at home as much as we would like to be, and the poor dog is left alone, and that's tough. These are very, very social beings. I mean, even more so, we humans are social beings, but dogs maybe even more so. They really do suffer when they're left alone.
Dr. Wynn, would a so-called happy dog bite someone or attack someone?
I'm not a great expert on dog attacks. I wouldn't want to go out on a limb there as to exactly what are the causative features that lead to dog attacks. But I think, generally speaking, a well-balanced dog in a happy home is of course much less likely to cause a problem than a dog in a difficult situation. One of the studies that looked at what causes dogs to bite found that actually it's not just a function of the dog, it's a function of the people around the dog. And often dogs that bite belong to people that bite as well, as it were.
You know, we're seeing more people, Dr. Wynn, who, to exaggerate a bit, treat their dogs almost as kids, or they spoil them or treat them in a different sort of way. How might that affect, as we go forward, how might that affect the behavior of dogs? Again, I don't want to lump it all in together, but is there a feeling that as we start to treat the dog as more than just a loved companion, that could develop other complications?
Well, you know, treating dogs as beloved companions, as family members, it may be more widespread today than it was 100 years ago, but it's been a part of the human-dog relationship for as long as we have records that help us to understand what the human-dog relationship was like. So there are ancient Egyptian burials of dogs with inscriptions that make very clear that the people 5,000 years ago loved their dogs. And there are books written by ancient Greeks from 2,500 years ago that make very clear that affection was very strong, very deep. So I don't think we need to be embarrassed about feeling affection for our dogs. And I don't think, although it's possible that it's more widespread today than it was in history, it's not a new thing. It's not a new thing. So, and to some degree, if I'm going to let this animal live in the most intimate spaces in my life, I mean, why not have affection for it? I don't think it's entirely crazy to have affection. I think it would be crazier to have an animal live inside your home and not feel any fellow feeling for that animal. That would actually be crazier. But that said, one has to keep in mind that this is not a human being, that to some degree we can respond to our dogs the way we respond to our children, and a lot of the time life goes along happily, but the dog actually has different needs than a child does, and I don't think many people get too confused by that. But, you know, when people start feeding their dog slices of cake from the table, that is just not appropriate. I mean, who knows whether it's appropriate for our digestive systems, but certainly eating cake is very unhealthy for dogs. Eating chocolate is very unhealthy for dogs. And there comes some point where we have to recognize that this is a different being, a member of a different species, and its needs need to be respected at that level.
Dr. Clive Wynn is a professor in ASU Psychology Department, also the director of the Canine Science Collaboratory. We were also joined by Samantha Spinelli of Maricopa County Animal Care and Control and Melissa Gable, who's the PIO for Animal Care and Control. Thank you all for the conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.